Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So what do you get when you take a 16th century literary classic and you open source it for the 21st century? Something called Open Utopia. It's a web-based platform that takes Thomas More's classic tale, Utopia, and turns it inside out for readers to not only consume its content, but become more active collaborators. Joining me now is the creator behind the project, NYU professor Stephen Duncombe. Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
For people who haven't ever read it, why does Thomas More's Utopia resonate with you in the 21st century in the first place, even to launch a project like this?
Well, first of all, we use the word utopia all the time. And you know, it's essentially, this is a term that More himself coined. And it's become just part of our modern language. And one of the things I was really interested in is, well, what is the nature of utopia, Thomas More's utopia in particular? And I remember reading it, maybe as a freshman in college and being pretty bored by it, to be honest. Seemed sort of dreary and dull, and people did what they were supposed to do, and everything a 19-year-old was not interested in. Mm-hmm. And I got back to it because I was invited to Moscow, actually, to Moscow State University, to teach a seminar on political imagination, and I reread it again, and reread it in the light of the disastrous utopia of the Soviet Union. And what I realized was that More was doing so much more in that book than merely laying out a plan for an ideal society.
He was satirizing, I guess it would have been the England of his time.
He's satirizing the England of his time, really turning it upside down. But what's fascinating as well is that he's playing with the reader simultaneously. I mean, utopia is a word that More makes up, and it's taken from the two Greek words of eu and topos, which essentially means not place. So from the get-go, you understand that More is actually playing with this whole idea that there can be an ideal society. On the one hand, he creates this ideal society in literature and makes it appear realistic. That is that he describes what the landscape is like. He describes all the functions of society. But then at the very same time, he calls it no place. And the person who's telling this story in Utopia, this fellow named Raphael Hithlidaeus, well, his name actually comes from the Greek for nonsense. And so we're told this story of no place by a character that we can't trust. And so I realized very soon on that what Thomas More is doing is actually creating what I like to think of as an imaginal machine for getting us to think about what an alternative society might be like.
So your project lives on a website called theopenutopia.org. Take us through the sorts of things that readers are able to access and to actually do on this site.
First of all, it's a Creative Commons licensed no copyright edition, complete edition of Utopia with all of its letters, all of its marginalia. I always thought it was kind of ironic that the centerpiece of Utopia is that there is no private property, yet it was copywritten and remains copywritten.
There you go. But so, since it's a 16th century novel, the copyright has run out.
It has run out. Some of the translations have not. And so I had people retranslate it from the Latin and give it over to Creative Commons. So here's the complete edition, which one can download from the site very easily. But then I also tried to open it up in different ways, because if what More is doing is trying to get people to imagine utopia themselves, and we live in this era where we're not stuck with the paper and the ink and the sort of closed confines of the book, but can really open up participation in the digital age, why not do it with utopia? So I have a couple of things going on there. One is called Wikitopia, and it's essentially on a wiki platform where people can draft their own utopias, either by themselves or in collaboration with other people. And of course, because it's a wiki, other people can then go into your Wikitopia and redraft it and redraft it and redraft it.
And are people actually doing this, or are we so cynical as a society now about even the aspiration for a utopia that nobody actually does it in an earnest way?
Well, I just launched it last week. So I'm hoping that it will take off, and I'm hoping it's a platform for people to experiment with. I'm hoping that, yes, we're very cynical, but we have this profound sense that, you know, the options we're given just aren't enough, that the sort of the normality of politics and the normality of what is possible is just way too limited. And I think people feel that and understand that. Whether this will be the platform which to express it, who knows? We'll see.
So did you take a shot at designing a contemporary utopia yourself for the site?
I have not. And I think I haven't, because I'm really interested in seeing what other people do. I'm really interested in seeing if I could sort of, like Moore did, lay the groundwork for other people. I think that the problem when an author comes in and says, this is the plan for the future, you're really given two options. I accept it or I reject it.
All right, listeners, we have 5 minutes left in this segment. What would be an element of your utopia? We don't expect you to design an entire utopia on the spot, but now that you've gotten enough of an idea from our guest, Stephen Duncombe from NYU, who has launched theopenutopia.org, what might be an element of your utopia? Just blink and come up with one, and if you can, 212-433-WNYC. That's our on-air number, not our pledge number. We'll never ask you for money on the air, just for your ideas. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And I don't even know if anybody's going to call and come up with anything, but we'll see.
Yes. We'll have utopian imagination and desire.
What's the difference between an open source novel, which sounds like an exciting interactive project, and a novel by committee, which sounds like a recipe for mediocrity?
I think what the open source idea and ideal is that it has constant iterations. That is you can have a singular draft and then someone can redraft it and make it worse, but you can always go back to the original iteration. And again, I think what Moore was doing in the 16th century is essentially doing this. He's saying, like, I'm going to be the person who writes this. I'm going to create sort of this machinery for you to imagine other things, but there will always be the core or the kernel or the code, if you will, that remains constant. And that's the same thing that happens in any open source production. Another aspect of the Open Utopia is something that I worked with the Institute for the Future of the Book on, which is something called Social Book, where people actually add their own marginalia and then comment on each other's marginalia. Now, the book stays the same, but it takes on different meanings and interpretations depending on what sort of marginalia people add on.
By the way, all our lines are full.
Hey!
Instantly. So let's just go through some folks real quick and see what some elements of their utopian societies might be. And let's see. Okay, I'm just going to do this like unscreened in a few cases. Hi, you're on the air. Who's this?
Hi.
Hi. What's your name?
Raymond.
Raymond, you're on the air. Do you have an element of utopia?
I do. Cooperation versus competition.
That's a good one. I mean, that's the central of Thomas More's utopia. And he believed that actually money was the root of all competition. So the first thing that had to be gotten rid of was money. The second thing being lawyers, actually, as well.
All right. Ethan in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hi, what's your utopian element?
Hey, Brian. So this is an idea, I guess it's predicated on the idea of just being realistic. So my idea was that marriage contracts would have a date of expiration and an option to renew, just like a lease or other business contracts. So it would sort of foster a sense of really looking at relationships and deciding to go forward.
We actually did a segment recently on experiments that are actually taking place in various localities with renewable, not lifelong marriage contracts. But why were you smiling so much at his first sentence?
Two things. One is, in Moore's utopia, one of the aspects of Moore's utopia is that the bride and the groom get to inspect each other naked before actually getting married to make sure that they have compatibility with one another. But why I was laughing
that
is
usually
that
happens in the 21st century, too.
Is the idea of the practical utopia. The very idea of utopia in many ways is that it's absolutely impractical. That is, it's absurd. And it's that very absurdity which, of course, breaks open and opens up the place to think about what might be possible.
That's a Brian Lehrer Show listener all over, though. We ask for a utopian vision and somebody calls up and says, well, because this, we know you really want this rooted in practicality. Rachel,
utopia realized.
The West Village, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi there. I would like a society in which we sing and dance together every day.
Oh, I like that.
That's the best start we've heard all day to utopia, right? Thank you, Rachel. How about Vince in Passaic? You're on the air. Hi, Vince.
Hi, Brian. Points quickly. First of all, the blueprint for utopia exists already. It is simply actual democratic socialism, as posited, say, by Daniel De Leon or Karl Marx, as opposed to, say, Castro or, you know, former USSR or people who think Obama is a socialist. That's number one.
And you know what? Forgive me. Everybody gets one because our time is almost up. But, Marx.
Yeah, I mean, Marx was actually decidedly anti-utopian.
Really?
No, Marx thought that what utopia was a delusion.
Because you started this by talking about the dystopia of the Soviet Union that was based on a utopian ideal.
Well, except that it was a perversion of Marx, as I'm sure the listener will agree, and that Marx himself was decidedly anti-utopian. He felt that utopianism created a fantasy, a wonderful phrase that he uses in the Communist Manifesto, from which one would wake up with a miserable hangover.
We're out of time, but some other people calling and who won't have time to get on the air. One says, begins with the golden rule and Hillel's negative golden rule. Someone else says, bartering. Someone else says, no prejudice. Someone else says, the smartest guy in the room should be boss. I think they tried that already and it didn't work out. But do you hope to have an impact on politics with this project?
Well,
an impact on how people think about utopian thinking? Or are you just trying to do a really good interactive think project.
No, I really there's a political motivation behind all this, and I think that the callers that called in is exactly what I'm trying to stimulate. Not the idea of following some set plan produced by some sort of expert about the world that we should have, but instead really stimulating the discussion about what people can imagine as what they want for their ideal society.
So NYU professor Stephen Duncombe took Thomas More's classic tale, Utopia, and has created a wiki and other kinds of interactive projects around it. His website is theopenutopia.org. Thank you very much for making us think.
Thank you for having me on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More in a minute. Stay with us.